Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 409.
This week on the podcast, my book comes out on Tuesday, August 24th. Get a copy.
And if you're in California, you already have your ballot, and you only have to answer one question. So voting no on this recall could not be any easier.
Plus, Prop 22 is as illegal and ridiculous as it sounded.
And say it with us. Bush officials are not experts in Afghanistan. They are the opposite of that.
Plus, the COVID booster shots are coming.
Which is a good thing, because there's a post-vax Senate outbreak in process.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Yes. Oh my God, your book comes out tomorrow, Tuesday.
It comes out on Tuesday. You can already purchase it online. You can buy it at all of the places on the internet that books are sold, like Amazon and Bookshop. Do it at Bookshop if you're going to be responsible. And you can get the links to all of those on my website, which is just lilanordstrom.com, so that couldn't be easier. Or we will also post the links on our social media, because you're just obviously going to want this book, aren't you?
You got to read it. I've had the pleasure of reading it. It's great.
Yeah,
everybody should read it.
Yeah. Brent read it faster than he reads most books. So Brent
is 100% true.
A notorious slow book reader, unless the book is Dune. And
right.
Somehow read
all six of the Dune books very quickly. And those are not easy to get through.
Yeah, so let this be a sign that he has always been capable of reading books more quickly than he is claiming to.
Some Kids Left Behind is up there with Dune, everybody.
Yeah, imagine that.
So, with, there you go.
With a classic
novel, Dune.
Exactly, that I've never opened up. but as for news this week, there are a few important things that we need to talk about. But the most important, the thing that is most critical to our continued future together, is that you vote no on this dumb California recall, and you just move on with your life from there.
Yeah. And look, you know, we talked a little bit about whether, you know, I sort of debated whether I was going to, I looked through all of the other 46 candidates. Literally, I did that when the guide came.
It's like a comedy guide.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like worth, you know, an hour of your time to look up who these people are. And then if they have a website or to read their candidate statement, which is inevitably insane. Also, Angeline is running again. So you need to be reminded of that. So like, I highly recommend like doing that for like an evening of entertainment, you know, but like, and I was thinking, you know, there's a few people who are like, I'm a socialist or I'm a communist or whatever. And I was like, maybe I'll just vote for them. But then, you know, Newsom and the Democratic Party are requesting that you not fill out the second question. And initially I was like, why do they care? And I think ultimately it's because the more people who vote in that, sort of like the lower the threshold becomes for like, obviously somebody's going to get the most amount of votes, right? Like we know that because that's how counting works, right? Like somebody's going to have the most votes on the second question, right? So like, I think there's a lot of angst on Democrats' part, especially seeing that the first question could be close, the yes or no question. So there's been like some recent panic toward picking a Democrat that I have been seeing on social media a lot from people, and from people who are smart people and who are thoughtful people.
Yeah.
And I feel like it needs to be addressed, because this is voting for Kevin Paffrath on the second question is not a thoughtful or intelligent thing to be doing with yourself.
Well, and also before we talk about why, because there are many reasons why, there is also, so the reason that they settled on the strategy is because they pursued a different strategy in the Gray Davis recall era. And they ran some legitimate candidates. And what happened
Cruz
was
Bustamante,
a lot,
who I think was his lieutenant governor, right? Or something like that.
They
like,
tried to run backup candidates. And what happened was a lot of people were unhappy with how the state was being managed at that time. And because there were alternatives on the ballot, they voted for the recall so that they could vote for other Democrats. And I think the party learned that that wasn't a great strategy. And look, I'm not a Democrat and I don't care about what the party thinks. But I also think that something about, you know, I don't see this kind of recall process as a very legitimate process. I was actually just having this conversation with someone who tried to explain it to me, who was a New Yorker, the other day, and didn't realize I live in California, I think. And I was like, oh no, let me tell you about the California recall and why that's not a democratic process. And I think that there is, you know, the threshold to get a recall moving is so low in California. And it, you know, like so many of the props, functions as an end run around the legislature, that voting to legitimize this process, and in the process, voting in a way that upends the democratically elected governorship. And look, do I love Gavin Newsom? Of course not. I'm not insane. No. I have eyes and ears. But I mean, just
But we had an election in which he got the most votes.
The idea of upending his term in the middle of it because we're like grumpy about how the world is falling apart and we have a threshold that's so low that like we could actually make that happen in California is functioning as an end run around democracy. It's not functioning as a democratic process. And so I don't want to vote to legitimize that process. And I can see why the party chose to pursue a different strategy this time, given what happened last time, which is that they, you know, a lot of Democrats abandoned ship because Gray Davis was kind of a weak governor and they didn't really know, you know, and things were falling apart in California and they didn't really know what to do and they wanted someone else. And of course, everyone always wants someone else, especially in the middle of a crisis because, you know, everyone could always be handling a crisis better than they are in all of history. So I think, you know, more like there are reasons not to vote for Kevin Paffrath for sure. There are reasons just not to consider that second question a legitimate polling of California voters as well, though.
Yeah, it makes it very simple, too. I mean, we hinted at it in the rundown, but I got my ballot on Monday of last week, and I opened it immediately. And there is one thing that you have to worry about, and it is a yes or no question. Guessing will get you to, you know, having a 50-50 shot at getting it right.
And when has the California ballot ever been that easy?
Right. I mean, it was... Never has a ballot been filled out so quickly as my ballot for this recall. I mean, what a, and it was just in the mail. There's a Dropbox somewhere near you. I mean, getting this right has literally never been so easy, right? It's the first California election that you haven't needed a voter guide from us.
Oh my God, but people are so scarred. Have you noticed that people are so scarred by all of their past experience voting in California that they have continued to ask me for advice about this election as if it's an incredibly complicated election because they're just like, I'm missing something. I know I'm missing something.
You're not.
This is too easy.
Open it, vote no, seal it,
move
sign
on.
It, and carry on with your life. Yeah, it was great. I was I got my ballot on Monday, and I was done seconds later.
Yeah, that's what you're looking for in a voting experience.
Yeah.
But you do have to vote in it. That's the only thing you have to do is actually send your ballot in.
Yeah.
Let's talk about why Kevin Paffrath in particular, is not who you're voting for, I mean, in the second question.
Right. We're going to talk specifically about just like some of his policies that like make me question whether he's like an actual Democrat. But then there's something sort of like at the core of what he's doing right now that makes me really has actually been the thing that has sort of radicalized me in this recall. Because, you know, 2 weeks ago, I was kind of like, I guess I'll vote no. And now I think it's in part due to Kevin Paffrath that I have been like, everybody needs to get out there and just vote no, because this guy. We'll talk about some of his specific policies. He's, first off, he's a real estate guy, which is just like, so like a general non-starter. Not to say that there aren't lovely real estate people out there in the world, but they none of them should be governor. Like literally zero people who work in real estate should be governor. He's also worked for law enforcement, by the way. A second a second profession that you, I feel like, should be disqualifying.
Oh my God. I was going to tell you
as the governor of California,
there's an article in the New York Times about Curtis Sliwa, the Republican candidate slash fake person who's the cat guy who's running for on the Republican ticket for mayor of New York City. And there's a quote in it from Peter King, the representative from Long Island, who's a Republican, saying that he's thrilled with how the mayor's race is going because the one commonality that Eric Adams and Curtis Sliwa have is that they're both incredibly pro-police. And I was just like, kill all of us now. Peter King should not be the only person who's happy with all the choices here. That's not it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not the choice.
Yeah.
In any case, Kevin Paffrath, continuing. Yeah.
He claims that like having spent time in law enforcement like taught him about community policing, and it did not.
No, that's having lived in LA at a time where there has never been community policing going on that has been even marginally effective.
Yeah.
I say no.
He's also going out there, like, talking about how he's going to end homelessness, which is great. But his plan, and I'm not making this up, by the way, is in his first 60 days, he's going to, like, put forth an executive order. And he's going to have the California National Guard round up the homeless people and put them in, like, holding. Like he references the Javits Center.
You guys.
Here.
If there is one, if you are a person who's concerned about the housing crisis and you are also a person who hates having annoying things happen in your neighborhood and you think it would be great to just disappear all the homeless people, A, you're a monster. Get yourself checked out. But B, New York City actually attempted this. Camp LaGuardia was a 1,400-person essentially holding facility outside of New York City that they, like, shipped homeless people out to, and it was a huge fucking catastrophe.
No.
It, I mean, in ways where the city had to close it and back off. I mean, right, what could go wrong? What could possibly go wrong with such an inhumane strategy? But, I mean, like, this is not just a bad idea and inhumane, and you should know that just as, like, as a human being.
Right.
Because warehousing people is not actually a way to treat people, whether or not they have homes. But also, this is actually an inhumane strategy that was attempted by an inhumane mayor in another large city and was as awful as it sounds and was so awful that it had to be undone. So this, the fact that he is saying this now after this has been tried and failed in another city on a scale that was catastrophic is even worse than the initial sound of him saying it as just like a heartless human being.
Yeah, exactly. And now he does plan to get people into homes after that, right?
Eventually.
They're going to put them there initially. And the way that he's going to make that happen is by ending all real estate regulation in the state of California.
That sounds right. That sounds good. Yes.
Yep.
That way, you can have a chemical plant right next to your home, right next to an apartment building of affordable housing, I assume. Where is the affordable housing coming with this deregulation, does he think?
We don't know. Anywhere anybody wants to put it, obviously. That's the joy of deregulation.
People love putting in affordable housing, famously. That's something everyone is always up to.
Yep. Really going around hitting the point of how taxes are way too high and bemoaning giant corporations leaving the state.
They are not doing that.
Classic go-to.
That's not
Democrats,
happening.
Right?
Right.
Which is not happening. Right, yeah. He's talking about making COVID safety measures be optional.
Good thinking. So especially with Delta spreading and schools causing huge catastrophes everywhere. That sounds like a foolproof plan.
Yeah. He also has like some plans that I didn't even put on here for like, quote, future schools, which is like public-private partnership where like businesses come and like teach school children like how to work in whatever job it is that they like might like.
That is like if charter schools were put on steroids and then given free rein over our tax dollars. That is another way to funnel public money to private corporations to then not serve the purpose we're asking them to serve.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have to explain to you why that's a bad idea. I'm explaining to just the world because I can't believe how dumb an idea that is.
Yeah. But the, you know, if you're looking for a Democrat in this race to vote for, the California Globe, which is this lame, you know, California statewide right-leaning internet blog. I mean, it's not, you shouldn't be reading it, but like people do, unfortunately.
We read it for you.
Republicans read it. And they called Kevin Paffrath to the right of Falconer. Falconer is an actual Republican who was the Republican mayor of San Diego who is also running in this race. So
if you are a person who heard one thing about how you should vote for someone in order to stave off whatever chaos is going on right now with the 42 people that are running for office in the second question on the ballot, just know that whatever you heard about Kevin Paffrath was not clearly the full story if you're an intelligent person who then posted about it.
Exactly. But I think the thing that makes me, this is the thing that like got me so angry about him, because like, sure, maybe I guess he is, he claims he voted for Joe Biden, which is a low fucking threshold for being a Democrat. Yeah. But regardless, the thing that he is doing right now is that he is out there, he's not fully campaigning for people to vote no. His campaign is sending out texts and right also on the front of his homepage, if you go to his own website for governor, it says something to the effect of, it says, whether you're a yes or a no vote, vote for me. So he's essentially trying to troll for votes amongst the yes recall people. The only responsible thing for a Democrat to be doing here, if that's supposedly who you are, is running a no on the recall campaign and vote for me as a backup. That's the only, this is an all hands on deck situation right here to the point where even the fucking DSA has said vote no for this. And they are no fans of Gavin Newsom at all. So like, this is not acceptable. So you cannot vote for him. I don't, there's a lot
we
of
refuse.
People out there, like, it's a no.
We refuse you the right
it's a no
to
on
vote
him.
For him.
It's a no on the recall, and it's a no on Kevin Paffrath.
Yeah. And, yeah, this and, is, by the way, peak California. This is the classic prop phenomenon where what sounds like an easy answer, an easy backup answer, is in fact
Oh, there's a Democrat who's like polling at 8%. Like, let's vote for him. Sorry,
no,
I interrupted.
Like, no, no. This is as ridiculous as the confusion about what props actually mean when they say what they mean and it's not what they mean. Like, that is what's happening with this guy's campaign. So don't be pulled into the mayhem. His campaign, he's essentially, by positioning himself as a Democrat in a campaign where he's trying to overthrow a Democrat, he is running an end run around democracy campaign. You know, we've called this kind of effort an end run around democracy. We call props oftentimes end runs around democracy. He is running a campaign premised on end runs around your vote. So don't let him get away with that.
And I also, the only way that I can see how, if you were going to pick someone for that second question that was a Democrat, you could say to yourself, like, okay, well, maybe I don't disagree with, like, some of this, like, the fact that he wants to, like, deregulate real estate. But, like, he's also, like, you know, vehemently in favor of LGBTQ rights and racial equality and abortion rights and whatever some of these other issues are that, like, obviously we're afraid of probably the most with Larry Elder and some of these Republicans, right? But, like, I can't find any of that. I searched Kevin Paffrath and every single iteration of LGBTQ, gay rights, whatever. I searched women's rights with his name and abortion rights with his name. And those positions don't exist. They're certainly not on his website.
Of course not.
And it doesn't appear to me as though he's been asked about them either anywhere, because there's no interview with him talking that I can find. And I feel like I'm generally decent
also,
at using the
also,
internet.
Also, if these issues things, are like, your concern, and you don't care about any other issues to the extent that you're willing to have the entire housing market deregulated, then you can actually just care that Gavin Newsom stay the governor. Like, these are not, you don't need him to protect LGBTQ rights.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
That's a general position across the board in the Democratic Party. He is not, if you don't care about anything else, then don't worry about electing someone who's not Gavin Newsom.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. Like, you know, I think Kevin Falconer at certain points in his career, like, took some shit for, like, being a Republican who was, like, not the worst on gay marriage, you know? And like, I realize that's law right now. So hopefully that's not something that we have to worry about. But I mean, like, I literally there's Republicans who I feel like
Can
would
say
be
vaguely
better.
These
and I'm
things.
Not saying that you should vote for Falconer either. But, like, I think this is just, like, a bigger point to sort of, like, don't vote for anybody on the second question. But, like, also, if you are going to choose to do that, then I would say to spend a little bit more time with yourself and the internet and the voter guide.
It's hard because there's, like, 40 million candidates, so it's, like, hard to research all of them. But at least find out about the person that you are going to vote for.
Yeah, yeah.
And then don't vote for them if they're an asshole.
Right, exactly. This guy is like a 29-year-old YouTube. Like, also, the other thing that could convince you to not vote for him is to pull up the Meet Kevin YouTube page and watch literally 1 millisecond of it, and you will be like, I'm out.
Never mind. None of this.
This isn't it. This ain't it.
Yeah. No. We have some good news, though, in California as well this week. Prop 22 got overturned in the California Superior Courts. You guys.
You mean that's illegal?
Here's what happened. An American hero, who's a judge in the California Superior Courts, Frank Roche, on Friday ruled that the law illegally, quote, limits the power of a future legislature to define app-based drivers as workers subject to workers' compensation law, and added that the entirety of the law is unenforceable. He said it was unconstitutional in part because one of the things in that law was that it was going to require a 7/8 vote of approval in the legislature to make any future amendments to that law.
Yeah.
Which basically enshrines it into, like, the Constitution forever.
Yeah.
Because that's an unreachable threshold. Basically, SEIU, along with some Lyft and Uber drivers, or who filed this lawsuit, they filed it back in January. They wanted to have the measure overturned because, once again, and we should not have to remind you of this since we talked ad nauseum about Prop 22, Prop 22 is a perfect example of an end run around the state legislature where the state passed a law that was designed very specifically to address the problem of these apps not treating their employees like employees and not providing them the benefits that employees should accrue.
And they didn't like it, so they spent $250 million to make sure that we passed Prop 22.
They bought themselves protection from the legislature in the props, or not from the legislature. They bought themselves protection from the legislature abusing the prop system.
Yes.
They confused all of you with scare tactics and ads about how you weren't going to be able to, you know, do Lyft as a side gig anymore. And also the prices were going to surge. But here's the thing. They knew prices were going to surge anyway, because they knew that their business model had to change because they weren't actually making any money. So they had been subsidizing those cheap rides that whole time. And so not only did they lie to you about that, but then they ran a bunch of things lying to you about the fact that if you passed Prop 22, their workers would have health insurance, and a bunch of shit that was just not true. So
they don't.
This was all premised on a lie anyway. Voters in California got very confused because many, many people in California, myself included, are independent contractors, and got concerned because of the law that this was meant to amend, that they were no longer going to be able to be independent contractors under California law. That's not true. The law that was meant to protect independent contractors does not eliminate the categories of work that are always independent contractors. But it does seek, in some of these situations where there are apps that are using workforces that they're not providing any protections to enforce worker protections and worker compensation laws, you know, in those environments.
Yeah.
The fact that this was just ruled unconstitutional is, first of all, so fitting because it so clearly was anti-democratic in every possible way.
Yeah.
And also, literally, it was a specific example of a business buying a law for themselves.
Well,
in
that's
a direct
the thing.
Fashion.
And also ensuring it would stay that way, too. I mean, that was the thing that, like, you know, we had a lot of conversations about Prop 22 with people because there were a lot of, again, sort of like smart people who were in favor of this. And it was because, like you said, it was because they were either independent contractors or they were just, you know, concerned about the type of work that they did or whatever. And rightly so. But like you and I's, I think, stance on this was always like, do we want to hand over the writing of labor laws to giant corporations? And like, not only did we hand it over to it with them, we basically, like, you know, like you said, we enshrined it into the Constitution, basically. We like let them fully take over all the writing of laws as it pertains to independent contractors, like until the end of time. And like, I don't want Uber to be doing that. So I'm glad a judge was like, hey, no, maybe you can't do that.
No, I mean, this is not something that should be part of the prop system in general. And obviously our prop system is a complete mess. But this is not an appropriate use of that system. And they were going to use Prop 22 as a roadmap to do this in other places.
Oh yeah,
so,
it's coming to New York,
you know,
isn't it?
Yeah, they've been talking about it. And in an effort to put a halt to that in the first place, the legislature passed Assembly Bill 5, which was designed specifically to target the poor labor practices in this sector, which is a sector that is based in California. It's headquartered in California. And the idea that they were going to get away with spending such an outrageous sum in what was a clearly anti-democratic attempt to confuse the voters of California — this is why we don't think the prop system is a good idea. With the way that it's organized in California, it makes it very easy for money to supersede truth and ideas, as we've seen many times in the dialysis prop sector. But, you know, the idea that we were going to become the roadmap for them to rob workers in other states of their rights was so infuriating. And also, so inappropriate.
And also, they just lied throughout that whole
they
campaign
literally lied.
Also, that's the other thing about the prop system. I mean, we're
you
turning
can do
this
that.
Into a hit on the prop system, which
this
we're happy
should
to
be
do.
A hit.
I mean,
this is a perfect example
should,
of
right,
why
exactly, right?
The prop system can just pass any random unconstitutional law it wants,
right.
And somehow
well, and
California,
they can also run
what,
any
binding?
Ad that they want. Too, you know, I mean, they said if you saw any of those commercials, like, you would be convinced that anybody driving for any of these companies right now probably has like the gold standard of healthcare. They didn't get healthcare. They never got healthcare. They got a stipend for healthcare, and it's not very much money, and it's certainly not enough money to buy anything on the open market. Certainly, I mean,
I remember when they were petitioning for Prop 22, a person who was working part time as an Uber driver and part time as someone getting signatures for the prop system, because, you know, that's a paid gig in California. Mm-hmm. Tried to argue with me about Assembly Bill 5, and she was like, you don't understand. I'm an independent contractor, and I want to stay one. And I was like, I do, actually, because I'm an independent contractor, and I want to stay one. But also, the industries we're working in and the types of work that we're doing are very different. So I actually do understand what's in Assembly Bill 5, because I know that it, because she was like, if you're an independent contractor, it's going to stop you. Like, she was lying to me about what Assembly Bill 5 did, when she was saying it was going to stop me from being able to do my job. And I was like, no, I, unlike you, have read Assembly Bill 5. Like, AB 5 is like a thing I have actually like read. So I like know what it says in that bill. And yeah. You are a person who got told something by Uber and does not know what it says in that bill.
Yeah.
I also feel like they were lying to their own staff or their own drivers. They're not staff. They're lying to their own employees, not employees. They're lying to their own contractors. I knew I'd get there eventually, about what they were doing by supporting that policy in the first place.
Yeah.
But the thing that infuriates me the most out of all of this has nothing to do with workers stuff because, or labor law, because as much as I am furious at these companies now, and now I'm having to boycott them, which I'm mad about, I had defended them for years by saying they were providing an important public service in California because there was a lot of drunk driving and very little public transit available at night in California. When those companies came in, they changed everything about people's ability to go out and safely get home from bars and clubs at night. And it changed everything about road safety in Southern California, and I assume Northern California. So I was defending them for years against my will, knowing their labor practices were shit, because I was like, this is actually a function that the public sector should have resolved and didn't, and someone did actually step in from the private sector to resolve it. Mm-hmm. The fact that they said they threatened to raise their rates and then as soon as Prop 22 passed, raised their rates anyway, effectively eliminating their role as a public safety force because they're no longer an affordable way to get rides. If you're going to exploit your workers, at least provide affordable fucking rides so people don't have to drunk drive.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of drunk driving, they exploited people's fear on that because remember they had that whole campaign where they trotted out Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
Yeah. And by the way, for one of their campaigns, Mothers Against Drunk Driving for falling for that stupidity. Mothers Against Drunk Driving got paid off by the tech sector and decided to basically like abandon their mission entirely and all of their credibility in order to support Prop 22, which was the most exploitive law that has basically ever been passed in California. So like, screw off to them too. In any case. Good riddance to Prop 22. Let's hope that I'm sure it'll be appealed forever and we'll never get this resolved.
For sure.
But let's hope
that
I think
they've already said that it's still in effect, right? Like,
yeah, of
course.
Like,
they're appealing, like, they're going to keep doing whatever it is they're doing.
Let's hope that it doesn't get to the Supreme Court and gets instead to a court that just supports the lower court's decision and that we don't have to hear what Kavanaugh has to say about it, but that we do have to hear what another court in the federal system has to say about it in the state system. Actually, I wonder, does it go into the federal courts or does it stay in state courts? I don't know enough about the law. We'll have a legal expert to explain how this works.
Yeah.
We're just people who care about elections. We don't know anything about the law. In any case, here's some advice from us to you. If you are booking a TV show and there is a mess going on in Afghanistan and you are like, who can speak about Afghanistan to my audience of people who want to know what's going on in Afghanistan? There is one specific group of people that I think it's wise to avoid, which is the group of people that know the least about what has gone on and is going on in Afghanistan. And those are the people that got us into that mess and then refused to extricate us from it. So do not have former Bush officials whose entire incentive is to support the dumb choice that they made 20 years ago to get us in there and validate their ridiculous support of it since then. Do not have them on your TV show to explain to us what's going on right now in Afghanistan. Right. We actually shouldn't care.
Or dare I say it, and come for me, I don't care, Obama officials.
Also that. Don't have anyone who was involved in prolonging this ridiculous policy on the air as the expert in the policy. Because if there's one thing that we learned from the mess that we left behind in Afghanistan, it's that seemingly no one had done any research into what exactly was going on in Afghanistan while we were there. They seemed to have no idea what was happening and therefore were shocked when we left and everything imploded. Do you know who wasn't shocked? Me, a random American who has never been to war. I was just a person who was reading obvious signs that were coming in major news outlets and somehow I knew.
I know.
I don't know what was going on with them, but they are not the right people. Have toddlers on, a monkey, it doesn't matter. a giraffe, you know, go to this, like anything, anyone could be on, dead or alive, as long as they are not a person who lied to the American people about what was going on this entire time for all of the last 20 years.
Right. Like, also, like, if Nicole Wallace is hosting a two-hour block in the afternoon, remind yourself that she's a woman who was paid professionally for her work to sell you on that being a great idea when she was the press secretary for fucking George W. Bush or communications director or whatever the hell she was. So, like, maybe she's not it either. If you're
maybe she doesn't have a valid
still
opinion.
Watching MSNBC against our recommendations.
All better judgment.
But they're everywhere. Yeah. These people are everywhere.
If you find yourself watching the news and thinking, boy, this has really been a bad idea to leave Afghanistan, then you should take a moment to find out if the person that you're listening to say that is a person who was charged at any point in their career with selling you the war in Afghanistan. Because I think what you will find is that 100% of them are.
Well, and that's the thing that I feel like I want to, you know, I kind of went on a tirade earlier this week where I was sort of almost like potentially sounded like a Bush apologist. But like, you know, because there was that meme that everybody was sharing around where it was like Bush sort of like really looking smug. And then the caption was something
when
everyone is fighting about whether it's Obama's or Trump's
or Biden's fault
about or Biden's fault about Afghanistan or whatever, everybody or whatever it was. But like the answer is all of them, literally.
Yeah, it's everyone.
And that's what I just think that like you don't have a 20-year war where, you know, at some point there have been Democrats as president, there have been Republicans as president, there have been super majorities of either party in the Senate and in the House that, like, you don't get to, you know, there's also been a lot of people sharing things about how, like, really it was the, like, military-industrial complex that was the real winner here. And yes, that's absolutely
true.
But that's the fact that they were able to make all of that money is because of policy, right? Yeah. I mean, like, it's not like
and
they were freewheeling
time,
it over
the
there without us telling them to be there and making all this money, right? Like, I mean, this is a collective failure on the part of all presidents and all parties up until now, which is why I'm still standing Joe Biden, which leaves me in a real weird place.
It's,
and I've got issues with maybe
tough.
How they didn't, you know, get some of these people out of there like before they did, obviously. And some of these images are obviously horrifying, and I'm not here to fight to say that they're not, right? But that has also sort of like caused me to think about the fact that like everybody is really caring about this right now, right? And I understand because these images are horrifying. 70-some thousand civilians in Afghanistan have died over the last 20 years. Everybody right now is worried about at our hands is worried about getting women and girls out of there and 100%, right? But who do you think those civilians have been for the last 20 years? When we drone strike someone and blow up 100 people because there's one potential terrorist there, that's women that are dying, it's girls that are dying, it's wives that are dying, it's sisters that are dying. It's heartbreaking. I get it. You could take 100 images every single day for the last 20 years and find something just as heartbreaking, but we just haven't been looking at them.
Yeah.
So this is not worse now. What you're seeing now is better. And that's hard for a lot of people because it's so heartbreaking. And I get it, right? But like, it has been heartbreaking every single day for 20 years.
Yeah. And we have been the murderers that time.
Yes. It's us.
We were the ones murdering people. So the choice that we made was not to be like, let's stop protecting the Afghan people. The choice we made by leaving was to stop fucking murdering people.
Right. And to being, you know, I feel like there's been a lot of people on the left who sort of like have obviously been like, you know, concerned about some of these images. And it's just like, my question is like, so continue our imperialism there? Like, I, you know what I mean? I just don't know. I don't think that's the answer, right?
Like, it's hard. Like, I think part of it is that it's like difficult when you make a choice that has like visible repercussions in a situation that people had become numb to. Because like over the last 20 years, we had become numb to what we were doing in Afghanistan. And
that's
we also,
exactly
people
it.
Believed that when we initially went in there, we went in with cause. I mean, I don't know that I believed that, but some people did believe that.
Sure.
And so I think unlike in Iraq, where we like know it was based on a lie and we know we fucked everything up and we also know that we're not making anything better, I think in Afghanistan, there was this sense that like people felt like we were doing something good there because we kind of, you know, this incredibly repressive regime had to take a back seat when we came in and we were sort of claiming to hold together a government. I don't know how successfully it turned out we were doing that.
Well, they fled pretty quickly.
They fled real fucking fast. But I mean, I think that part of it is just the sort of whiplash of having paid literally no mind to what we've been doing in Afghanistan this whole time for 20 years. So this was a drone in the background of our lives for a full two decades. And then to see a sudden result from our, like to make a decision that has visible results after it had, we had become numb to the idea that we were out there droning civilians in Afghanistan. We all knew we were doing it and no one was doing anything about it because it was like in 20 years, how can you stop it more? You know, I went to fucking anti-war rallies like every fucking day of my life for like 4 years and nothing stopped. And so at a certain point, that movement started to kind of dissipate and it was because nothing was changing. But like this was a moment where we made a decision and then something changed. And so now people are like, what do you mean, women and children? But it's like, well, why haven't we cared about these women and children before? Like, we only cared about the women and children in Kabul, but we didn't care about women and children in the countryside who we have been just sort of like indiscriminately droning this whole time. Because that feels like it feels like we made a choice that we didn't actually make in this case. Like, it feels like, you know, the visual is that we made a choice to allow something horrible to happen in Afghanistan. But actually, something horrible was already happening.
Yeah.
And it was us that was caught. We were doing it.
Right. Yeah. And I do, you know, I think there's things to be said that, like, I would be happy to sort of, like, you know, or that should be debated. You know, I think, like, I don't understand, like, why some of these people weren't evacuated before we decided to leave.
It was a mismanaged exit.
Right. I don't understand.
And we totally fucked everyone over.
Right. I don't understand why if they felt like they knew that this was a thing that it wasn't properly planned for. I don't understand why over the course of the last year, Joe Biden has been telling anybody who will listen that it was going to be orderly if he then knew that it wasn't going to be orderly, but, which is what he's saying now because he's saying that he I just feel there's been a lot of doublespeak on it.
This is exactly why it wasn't going to be orderly, though, is because They have been misunderstanding what the dynamic was this whole time. This is why we never got out before. I don't think that they actually could plan for it because I don't think they ever invested that much sort of like intellectual capacity in figuring out what they needed to know to effectively transition that region to a less oppressive kind of leadership.
Well, I think you might be right. Yeah.
You know, this is certainly missteps have been made. But the misstep that was made was not to get us out of that situation. It was just that we did it wrong as usual.
I think that Biden has had another press conference this afternoon, actually sort of like giving an update on like how many people have been like airlifted out of there. And I think they've like broadened the area that is now secure around the airport, because I think they did send like a small amount of troops like back in to sort of like secure that area or whatever. But like he said at the end of it, he was like, you know, whatever anybody wants to say about anything here, like, I think history is going to see this as the right decision. And I think that he's right about
Current polling sees it as the right decision because a majority of Americans still support his decision to do that. And we were both really proud of him for standing up for his choice. We thought he would fold immediately. I thought for sure he would never defend the choice to actually leave. And I was so proud of him for doing it.
Yep. It's interesting. I was listening to, I can't remember if it was a podcast or maybe just on NPR or something, but they talked about sort of like his stance on this, like over the years. And it's been surprisingly consistent, not feeling like we should be there. Like he was against the surge, like as the vice president, like when Obama sent like an additional, like, what was it, 17 or 18,000 more people in there. I think he'd been on record even before Obama took took office and he was the vice president as being against that. I mean, he probably voted for it because that's what everybody did. But like, or maybe, I don't even know. Did they get to vote on that? I don't even know if they got to.
Probably not. It's executive order.
But anyway, so like that was sort of actually surprising to me too. I mean, he really actually sort of like did what he said he was going to do, which just, for any politician is sort of, there's something to be said for, I feel like.
I know. No, I have been pleasantly surprised that he stuck by this, knowing how much pressure has come from the hawkish wing of the Democratic Party, which is the wing that controls the Democratic Party in basically every part of this experience. You know, we have seen Democrats defend this nonsense and defend military actions in the region in other contexts throughout this entire period, as if that is a thing that we all should be thinking is sensible. And it has at no point really been sensible. But when you think about who has had leadership positions to sort of determine what our foreign policy positions are going to be as a party, it's like people like Hillary Clinton, who will go to war with anyone who will have her. Like, you know, it's been a very kind of warmongery kind of, you know, parade of people. And it's people like Chuck Schumer, who is trying to go to war with the whole Middle East anytime he wants. And, the kinds of leadership position or the kinds of positions that people in Democratic leadership in various positions have been advocating for this entire of the last 20 years, including, I mean, I talk about in my book how disappointing it was to me when my representatives voted for this war, because I felt like, as a person who had just experienced the attack that supposedly was the premise for all of this, that I wasn't interested in having someone else's school have a terrorist attack happen at it or get bombed by the, but get drone attacked by Americans just because my school did. Like, that didn't seem right to me. But so this has been a long-standing position in the Democratic leadership. So the fact that Biden broke with it enough to not listen, I believe that they all were, you know, they all wanted to talk about leaving Afghanistan, but no one had the guts to actually do it. Yeah. So I'm a little proud that he had the guts to actually do it. And was just like, Democrats rarely are willing to actually bite the bullet and that sort of thing. And they're so weak about defending their positions. And he was actually very strong about defending this. So good for him.
Especially on national security, because, you know, Republicans love to just, you know, it's so weak on, you know, security and on weak on terrorism. And I mean, we've seen all of this play out over like every presidential election cycle, right? And they'll probably bring it out in 2024 also. So
well, of course they will.
Just the political ramifications of this, I'm sure he had to factor into his decision. But he didn't, I don't think.
Right.
I don't, you know what I mean? Like
No, also, this is the right choice politically too, I think.
Well,
because
the
majority of Americans don't want to have been there. And I think, you know, for a few weeks, this is what we said. I think we said this last week or the week before, where it's like Democrats fail often to make strong choices that will have 2 weeks of repercussions and then will turn out to be positives. Like they won't do a thing that will get them complaints for 2 weeks, but will ultimately deliver votes. They'll often chicken out. And like, this is a time that they actually did the thing where they knew that there was going to be bad press for 2 weeks and that they were just going to have to put their heads down and deal with it. Republicans are masters at doing wildly unpopular things that in 2 weeks everyone forgets about. And because of that, they seem to control everything with a minute minority of the country actually voting for them. So in any case, let's talk about COVID. It's terrible. Delta's everywhere. Greg Abbott is personally spreading it to everyone in the state of Texas because he tested positive for COVID. He's now tested negative 4 days after his first positive. The day before he tested positive, he appeared at an indoor rally in Dallas and spoke without a mask to a room of supporters who were all elderly GOP people. So they were A, unmasked, and B, probably not vaxxed. And he's been walking around without a mask this whole time, people at my local grocery store. So too many of us are walking around without masks at the moment.
I know. Yeah. Yes. Definitely. Definitely. Nobody tried harder than Greg Abbott to get this.
Give everyone.
To get COVID. Or to get it himself. And then to
get himself. I know. Well, he got vaccinated and still managed to try hard.
Yeah.
He's he's been advocating not wearing masks, but also they've been trying to basically like criminalize putting mask mandates in schools, and they had to back off from one after they got a ton of bad press, in part because people started adding mask mandates to their dress codes to get around stupid legislators in Texas who were trying to prevent them from requiring masks in their schools.
Genius. Kudos to whoever came up with that, by the way.
Because then the choice is we can either let girls wear spaghetti straps or we can have a mask mandate. And you know how they feel about female shoulders in a lot of these places.
Oh my God.
So distracting.
Texas and Florida. Yeah.
So confusing. So that was a genius workaround. And also, back to school is a mess right now. Everyone has COVID. Kids are dropping like flies. Schools are closed. Districts are closing.
I saw some stat the other day that something like 14 or 15,000 teachers and students in Florida are like currently quarantined right now or something.
There was one district where like 6,000 kids were quarantined within like 2 or 3 days of school starting.
Meanwhile, New Zealand just went back into lockdown because they had one positive test.
Right.
the country, New Zealand, I'm talking about, right, by the way.
We are back to rates that were only surpassed by our Christmas outbreaks in the entire country. But we're back to very high rates. And those include some breakthrough cases. People are getting breakthrough cases. I think, you know, that's why in a lot of places mask mandates have returned even for vaccinated people. And they're talking about booster shots.
I think the rate of hospitalization and death amongst breakthrough cases
is much lower.
Very, 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 very low. Yeah.
But they've been reporting that data in a way to stave off panic that has not always been the most truthful. So look, it's not that people are like dropping like flies who are vaccinated. That's not what I'm saying at all. But I am saying that there has been an effort. I was just reading about this in Massachusetts, but in other states as well, to make sure that when you're framing the data about breakthrough case numbers, that you frame it in a way that sort of minimizes the percentage so that it's like out of the whole population or, you know, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And
well, they're still wanting people to get vaccinated.
They're wanting people to get vaccinated for sure. If you are vaccinated, though, people are getting symptomatic COVID from like post-vax. So that's why they're talking about booster shots. So I would say wear a mask is all I'm saying.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, there's been an outbreak of vaccinated people in the Senate. John Hickenlooper got it. Roger Wicker got it. Angus King got it. So, you know,
Lindsey Graham had it.
Right. Lindsey Graham had it.
Well, I think some other people had it also, too. But these guys are.
Ron Paul. I mean, a bunch of people had it who were just roaming around trying to spread it to everyone before the vaccines, too.
Yeah.
But these people are vaccinated and they had it. So.
Right.
Listen, don't panic. Continue to be vaccinated. Get your vaccines. Get a booster shot if one becomes available. But like.
For sure. Pretty soon they're going to be
available. Take precautions. I got vaxxed so early that I was like, early, I hope that they don't do a thing where they're like, only old people can get booster shots. Because they're saying if the immunity wanes after 8 months, mine is already starting to wane. So.
Right. Well, I know. And it's weird too, because like, I feel like, well, I mean, there's a lot of people who don't think that we should be doing this.
Because we should be giving them to places where
boosters, but
I think it is, here's my thought on that. It is naive to think we would be that way. Obviously in a just society or just universe where we do ethical things as a country, of course, that's what you should do. You should aim. We should have given everyone their first shot in the entire world before we all started getting second shots. I mean, obviously.
I agree. Yeah.
But also, realistically, that's not what America was ever going to do. So...
No.
Let's not
but I do think
pretend
there,
we don't
there
know
is
ourselves.
Something to be, I mean, there's obviously something to be said for it, though, because it's sort of like even just the variant that is screwing us right now, like came from India, right?
No, it's insane.
Or
we are literally
from,
never going to get out of this with this mentality.
No. Yeah.
It's a completely insane mentality to have.
It is.
That said, I want a booster shot if I live in a country where they're giving them to me instead of other people. I'll still take it.
Although it's weird because they don't have recommendations for people who got Johnson & Johnson yet, which is one shot. There's also a ton of different data that shows as though Moderna and Pfizer are also protecting against the breakthrough cases differently. Right?
Yeah.
Like it seems as though Moderna is doing a little bit better job, which is what I got. Like, do I need to get a third shot of Moderna? I mean, I guess if they're telling me then like maybe, but also I don't know.
I think what they're finding, Moderna also, they don't have the same data on whether it wanes that they do on Pfizer, because Pfizer, they started giving first and
Pfizer
there are
first,
countries where in Israel, everyone got Pfizer. So they have some data that they don't have about Moderna. But it does, I mean, Moderna is faring way better. But my suspicion about that is that, and I'm not a scientist, so what do I know? But I know because Moderna came later, I think probably the data is a little skewed because people are, if they do, you know, if your immunity wanes,
they still
then people have had
more
Pfizer
immunity
for longer. Right.
Correct. Right. Yeah.
So that's my
theory,
but it's a conspiracy theory.
Yeah. It has spurred people to be getting vaccinated, though. We've had three days over a million vaccinations for like the first time. It's the first time that we'd had a million vaccinations in a really long time, and we've had a string of it now.
And
so
some of this
scared.
Is also because they have started rightfully mandating it in a lot of public spaces, including, you know, there are school districts mandating it. There are hospitals that are mandating it. And that is as it should be. That is 100%. Just as you have to wear pants to go outside. You make... You inhibit your freedom in numerous ways every day to go outside.
Well, and you have to have a million different vaccines to go to school.
Exactly. I was going to say, they already mandate vaccines in schools up the wazoo. So, like, of course, masks and vaccines can be mandated in public spaces and private spaces and any spaces. Because of course they can be, because they are public health, in the same way that wearing pants is a public health protocol. Because pants help keep everyone's germs inside of their pants. You know, vaccines. Also, one final note.
Yeah.
The marketing campaign that I think maybe you can help with, because Brent can write a marketing campaign, that I saw on Twitter that I feel like is important for all of us to keep in mind as we go about our lives trying to convince anti-vax people that they should get vaccinated. COVID and erectile dysfunction have been linked.
And oh, yes.
I think that if we really want to get this problem solved, because let me tell you who's out there unmasked just spreading germs out in all of society. It's men.
Yeah, it's men, obviously.
Men aren't covering their noses. Men feel, for some reason, that it's sort of a commentary on their toughness to wear a mask.
Yeah, it's the new man-spreading.
Yeah, but do you know what men don't want? Because it is covered by every single insurance company, by the military, by anyone. You can't. It's impossible to get affordable birth control anywhere, a lot of places. But you can get erectile dysfunction meds from any of the public financing, publicly financed, you know, insurance options.
Insurance,
if we could really drive this link between erectile dysfunction and COVID home, then I think that we could get a lot of these people vaxxed without an argument.
I think you're right.
And I'm waiting for that marketing campaign. I'm waiting for a funder, and I'm waiting for someone to write it. And I will help. I'll help however you need me, you know?
Yeah. Hey, have they started that vaccine? Do you have to show your vaccine papers to get into restaurants or anything in New York yet?
It's theoretically the law, but it's not being enforced until September something.
Oh, September.
So I don't know what a law that's not being enforced is. Is it a suggestion? Like, what does that mean?
Right. I know. Yeah.
So who knows?
I've had to show mine a few times because just specific businesses are doing it. And I think the city council passed something here, but it like hasn't gone into effect and it might have to go to the board of supervisors. I can't remember exactly, but like, because I think we're thinking about doing it here too. But like, I've gone to a few restaurants where I've had to show.
Good. Good.
My little app thingy.
I downloaded my Excelsior Pass so that I could do it.
Yeah.
So that I'm ready. In any case, that's the news this week. Buy my book.
Yes.
We will post the link, but it's literally, you can buy it. It's called Some Kids Left Behind. It's written by Lila Nordstrom. You can find it at any of the online book retailers that you frequent, or you could call your local bookstore and ask them to either stock it or order it if they don't already have it, because that would be a big help to me.
Yeah.
You should do that even if you're going to buy it online.
I was going to say, I need to call your local bookstore and ask. I buy all my books. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, beyond that, just rate it places. I mean, rate it highly, but like, you know, rate it on Amazon, rate it on Goodreads, rate it on any of the places that books are rated.
Yeah.
And tell your friends. Post it on social media. All right. We did it.
So exciting.
It has a beautiful cover. You'll love posting it on social media.
Yeah. It's nice.
And that's the news this week. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.